think it's so timely, the people that we're going to be hearing from, because this is really talking about strategy, how to plant well. And so there is a tie together between 8 ways to improve yourself as ascending church, which you are ascending church. You're somewhere on that pathway, and you're going to be that if you're not that now. And then you're going to hear about co-vocational planting, which there's a lot of that too. So I love the strategic connection between the two. And I love the fact that you're going to hear from Will Browning today. You've already heard from him once on the platform, and I hope your heart was filled like mine was of encouragement. And just to hear, isn't it great? Don't you feel relief when you hear what God does? It's like, wow, I was working so hard, but God is so far ahead of us, doing exceedingly abundantly above all that which we could ask or imagine according to the power that works within us. That is motivating and inspirational. It's not about me. I'm so grateful for how God's used Will over the years. He is now currently the Send Network director for California. They gave him Los Angeles. He did really well there, so they gave him California. We're going to give him maybe the whole western half of the United States eventually. So we've got a plan for his life. He's a friend. We are friends from way back. I met Will when he was in seminary, and just love to see what God did with him. He and his wife, Tara, and 12 adults, part of 12 adults that moved to South Carolina, Somerville, South Carolina, and planted a church. And that 12 grew exponentially and is still thriving now. They planted 9 different churches, but it became a center for and a hub for church planting activity. So not only did they preach the gospel, teach the gospel, and share the gospel, but they multiplied the gospel in their location. So I'm grateful for him and what God's done with him. So if you, by the way, if you need translation services, hit the QR code there in the back, and you could, most any language, you could get translation services for this time together. 8 ways to improve as ascending church. Let me lead us in prayer, and then I'll let Will take over. Father, I thank you that you are the God who's able to do exceedingly abundantly above all that which we could ask or imagine. Lord, my heart's so full of what I'm hearing and what I'm seeing and what I'm experiencing even, Lord, as your spirit moves in a new way in North America and touches the nations with the gospel. Lord, I thank you for Will. I thank you for how you're using him, how you have used him, and how you're going to use him. I pray, God, that you would give him clarity of mind today and heart, that you would give him fresh wind and fresh fire. May this, even this hour together, be more than we could ask for. And may we be encouraged, and actually may we hear from you so that we might do something different because we've been here today. In Jesus' name, amen.
All right, well, good morning. Thank you guys for being a part of this. Excited to chat with you a little bit. I'm going to give you 8 ways that I think that you can either improve as a sending church or start becoming a sending church, and I hope that it'll be helpful. But I need to ask the question, how many of us are here are in the place where we're trying to not just plant a single church, but we're trying to multiply, so you are a sending church? How many of you guys would say, I am a sending church pastor or hoping to be one or leader? Excellent. And then how many of you say, I'm just a church planter. We're going to multiply one day, but right now we're just trying to plant this one church right now. Any of you guys in here? Awesome. Awesome. That helps me to know how to best frame some of the things we're going to talk about. Because even if you are a church plant that has not multiplied, our hope is, just like a good father is hoping to one day become a grandfather. And any sending church pastor is also hoping that one day the church that they plant will also give them a grandbaby. And it's probably just as exciting as it is when you have your first grandchild. It's a bit of a surprise. You don't have as much responsibility. You get to somewhat just celebrate them. It's a lot of fun. And we had 2 of our churches that became multiplying churches themselves. And the statistics bear it out to be very, very hard. Only about 4% of our church plants actually go on to plant another church afterwards. So we're seeing a lot of people who just plant, and they see that as the end game. finding someone who will plant and then see that church then plant again, that is almost like the cream of the crop. So if you have that in you, that desire to be the cream of the crop, then be a church that not only multiplies, but then make sure that you have some grandbabies. Now, today I want to start by thinking about the 10-year anniversary for a church plant. I remember mine. We planted in South Carolina. I got to lead there for 14 years, and when we had the 10-year celebration, it's a crying kind of moment for a church planter. You are just a little nostalgic about things. I'll never forget my 10-year anniversary as a church planter. The worship leader sang the song "Do It Again." If you guys know that song, it starts with "I thought these walls would fall by now," and I'm just crying on the front row, listening to them warm up, because that's how it feels. It's like, I mean, I prayed that it would last 10 years. I hoped that it would, but now here we are. We've made it. You know, we've got a budget. We've got a staff. And that 10-year anniversary kind of makes you think about some things. And most church planters in that 10-year celebration, they want to thank at least one person. They usually in that service stop and say, "I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for blank." I hope that what we do today is that what you learn here and you put in place, that when that church planter says, "I wouldn't have made it if it wasn't for blank," that your name is filled in. One of the things that I recognized is the person that I thanked the most, his name was Don Brock. He didn't give us $1. He was not the financially supporting church. But I'll tell you what he was. He was there for me when I was hurting, and he helped me get unstuck when I didn't know where to go. And that is who on my most nostalgic day said, "I just can't get past this sermon and not say thank you to Don Brock for what he's done. This church wouldn't be here without Don Brock." But it's interesting, not signed up as my sending church, not a church that was giving us money, but in my mind, he was the most important person in the process. I want you to have in your bucket of influence a lot more than just finances. I'm going to give you 8 of these. I'll probably tell you some stories throughout to make it more than just a list, but I want you to have a list of things you can do that could impact a church planter that's even more than just giving them some money. All right, so here's the first one. Very, very simple. The first thing that you can do is simply just get started. Just get started. Find some place that you can play the game. What we're doing here is to give you several places where you can just simply get started. I want to give you a little bit of a history for us. So I had an important relationship for me. It was actually Dino Sinese, who just introduced me, and also a friend, Neil McGlowan, who had launched a project that was really about multiplying disciples and multiplying churches and thinking through a kingdom perspective. And as a first-year church planter, the only thing I had in my mind was I was going to plant this church. I had heard at my calling moment, I heard God say, "I want you to do everything you can to see this generation come to worship me." That's what I heard. I'm not a worship leader, so I knew it wasn't about songs. It must be about seeing new people come to know Christ. So my whole idea was, I want to do everything I can to see this generation. So that meant I was a student pastor. Was focused on this generation. Well, that then moved from feeling like, I don't know if I can change a church from the student pastor chair, much less an entire generation. And that's when I started thinking about being a church planter. But it was still, you know what? Church planting is the, you know, the number one tool for evangelism under heaven. That's what Peter Wagner said. So I was like, okay, if I'm going to reach this generation, we got to plant a church. I got to be a church planter. So I moved into that. And then I moved into this training that started challenging me that your power isn't just simply in your seating capacity of the church that you plant, but your capacity to send people. If you want to see a generation reached, it's going to require for you to not plant a church, but be a part of a church planting movement. And that started something for us. So I was like, all right, we've got to start. We were in year one, but we got to start. And that's my advice to you. Just get started. So I found a church planter. Actually, he was in my cohort. I would tell you he was one of my best friends. We would coach each other. And I just went to him. His name was Jay Hardwick. And I said, Jay, I want to start supporting your church plant. And he went, Will, I'm pretty sure our church is bigger than your church. And it was. He's like, doesn't it feel like a little bit of like, I don't know, we're just passing money back and forth? I said, listen, man, what's most important is that I put you up on a stool on a stage and tell our congregation we're going to get started in church planting from day one. So, yes, it might be a little bit funny for us, but it is culture building for our church. And that was all I needed. That's all I needed to do, because what else do I have to offer? I've only been doing this for a year. And then we got our second church planter, and we're like, you know what? We can do a little bit more than just simply give them money. So we said, all right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to bring you in, and we're going to train you. So we went from money only to money and training. And the very same training that I was speaking of, we put them through that training. Then we got our third church planter, and it's like, okay, we know we need to give them money. We know that we need to give them training. What if we gave them some of our people? So we brought them in, not only trained them, and I started doing this thing that we did with every church planter from that point forward. It was also a culture building moment for us. I would always bring the church planter up to announce that he's going to plant a church. This is somebody who's now, you know, they've seen him, they've heard a little bit, now I'm bringing him up on the stage. Now I'm going to get behind this guy, and I'd do this every single time we'd plant a church. I would say, Journey Church, that was our church, if you are here in this room and you are breathing, I want you to stand up. And, you know, everybody was just kind of like, And then I would say as clear as I could, I want you to understand this. If you are standing, you are welcome to leave Journey Church and to go with our new church planter. And I want you to also know that if you're thinking, what if that means that Journey Church dies? I said, that's what good mamas do for their kids. And if we need to die so that they can thrive, then we'll just do what a good mama does. Now, let me tell you what happened every time. 10 people left, 20 people left, and 2 weeks later, 50 new people had come. Because God will always bless a leader who is willing to give to his mission. I would say it a scary way on the other side. I am not sure he will continue to bless a leader who will not be selfless with the resources that he's been given. So then it became, okay, we're going to give him some money. We're going to give him some training. We're going to let him take some of our people. And then it was, we want to allow for them to have access to us even through the process. So, hey, if you want to come to our staff meetings, if you want to come to sermon prep, and what happened was you just keep building on what God had started in you. And maybe one of these eight things is just something that you can get started with. And don't feel bad about that. Just do what you can to get started in this mission. Now, there's this beautiful passage in Acts chapter 9. It's important that we know this, because this is the single and only place that church planting is mentioned in all of the New Testament. I don't love this. You know, I've given my life to church planting, and it's not totally clear, but this is what it says. It says, so the church throughout all of Judea and Galilee and Samaria had peace and was being built up, and walking in the fear of the Lord and in the comfort of the Holy Spirit, it, referring to the church, multiplied. That's the only verse we have. This whole network built on it. But the truth is, if you think about what is the likely outcome of reaching a city with the gospel, making disciples, would be the multiplication of churches. So we are on the pathway of what the New Testament has asked all of us to do. But part of getting started is going to know how to talk about things. All right, let me go to the second one. Second thing I want you to do to consider. Remember, none of these are financial, but I want you to think about making protected time for a church planter. All right, I don't have statistics to back this up, but I do have empirical data, and I have my own personal experience from what I just told you. you can become in the 90th percentile of sending churches, meaning you're better than 90% of everyone else. You're in the top 10% if you will do just one thing, and that is make protected time for a church planter. All I'm talking about is you go, hey, man, I want us to meet the second Friday of every month, and I'm just going to be here in this coffee shop for the next hour and a half, and if you need me, whatever question you have, I will be here to answer. I am committed to this time. Nothing will become more important than this. I will be here for you if you make it yourself. I'm telling you, a leader who will do that will be in the top percentile of all sending churches just because they made time for a church planter. You know, these are guys that are trying to figure ministry out. Many of the things they have to do it for the first time. And knowing that there's a seasoned person who's done it before makes you uber valuable. And I can say this as now a middle-aged man who's a grandfather himself now. There's nothing more honoring than a younger man asking an older man a question. It just shouts, you're valuable. You have something to offer. And we should lean into that as church planters, that we can honor them by that. But simply committing that time. I had a pastor, he was one of our sending church pastors, his name was Hal West. And Hal was in his late 60s. He had pastored the church that he was at for 30 years. And he did this for me. He's like, a Wednesday of each month, I would go over to his town and he would take me to some restaurant. He would pay for the food. And all he would do is say, what questions do you have? I'll never forget asking him. I was like, all right, Pastor Hal, if you could go back to your 29-year-old self, because I was 29, go back to your 29-year-old self and give yourself one piece of advice, what piece of advice would you give? I mean, this is, you know, 20 plus years ago now. He said, I would create a culture of change at my church. Now, he's pastoring First Baptist Church of Monk's Corner, South Carolina. And I was like, doesn't seem like you've done as much change as that statement says. And he goes, that's it. You see, you're going to have an event that's going to be successful. And you're going to think, let's do that again next year. I'm suggesting you don't do it next year, because you do it next year, you find a leader who's going to do it next year. That leader is convinced to do it because you're like, we really need this. This is going to make an impact on the community. And then 3 years later, you don't need to do it, but you've already made so much of an influential person to like, this is what we do. Don't do that. Don't do it year two. Create a culture of change. And I was just writing this down going, man, I need more of this. I need this kind of leadership in my life. So the second thing you can consider doing, doesn't cost you any money, it will cost you some time, is to make protected time. Now, I will say, you should be, if you're a sending church pastor, you should be selfish with when and where. You should be selfish with your choice about when we're going to do this and where we're going to do it. Like, if Friday mornings work best for you and your favorite place is this coffee shop, then you should make it that. Because it's just a little bit extra that you have to say yes to making it there, because this time works for me and this place works for me. So be a little bit selfish in that as you're making that choice. All right, number three. Share your pulpit. Share your pulpit. Now, we all know, we probably heard this, many of us have experienced it. It takes about 100 sermons to find your voice. And if you think about that, you preach every Sunday each year, that's a couple years. That's a couple years of going at it. And if you do that when you're planting your church, actually in this very vulnerable time is when you're finding your voice. So allowing for a church planter to have some opportunities to preach is a great opportunity for him to begin to find his voice. And he will find his voice faster when there's someone speaking into him saying, hey, this is what you do well. This seems to be a struggle. You should lean towards these things. Let me show you these resources. And let me give you another selfish reason to allow for church planters to use your pulpit. It's a chance to let the horse run before you pay for it. Let's see what he's got. Let's see what kind of communicator he is, because some guys are really, really good around the table, but that you put them in front of a pulpit and a stage and you kind of see something. So for me, I wanted to get them up there, not just they had exposure to our church, but I also kind of wanted to see them do it a little bit. Let me see what they have there. So number three was share the pulpit, share your pulpit. Let's move into number four. This is a really important one. Leverage your influence. So this doesn't cost you anything, not monetarily, but what it is when you say to another pastor, I'd like for you to talk to my church planter and hear what God is doing, because you as a pastor are behind him, who then goes to another pastor. This is allows for him to borrow a little bit of your credibility. So you can just simply say, I'm going to go find five pastors. I'm going to tell them about what we think about you, and then say, would you be willing to have a meeting with them? Your influence can be borrowed. Now, I think this is another biblical moment. We were in Acts chapter 9 when I read the last verse. Let me read this one to you. It says this, and when he, this is Barnabas, Paul, and when he, Paul, had come to Jerusalem, he attempted to join the disciples. And they were all afraid of him, for they did not believe that Paul was truly a disciple. But Barnabas took him and brought him to the apostles and declared to them how on the road he had seen the Lord, who had spoke to him, and how at Damascus he had preached boldly in the name of Jesus. So I want you to imagine this. In the first half of the book of Acts, we see Peter, John, and also Barnabas. They're kind of out front. I mean, Barnabas is a star. If you don't know this, his family gives an offering of land that is what funds the New Testament mission that Paul goes on. He's not only an encourager, he is funding the mission. He's a star on the stage. In this moment, Saul is somebody they're scared of, somebody they're worried about, somebody they're not sure about. You think about it, there's some reasons to be scared about him. I mean, his methodology is going to be a little bit crazy. Like, we're going to go to the Gentiles, not to the Jews. That's a little bit wild. His theology is crazy. He's going to say that you don't have to follow all the Jewish laws to become a Christian. This is a rogue leader. He's also going to become the best church planter we've ever had. And here's what happens in this passage. The gatekeepers to the New Testament church and the mission are relationships that Barnabas has that Paul doesn't. So what he does is he puts his arm around Paul and he says, this is my guy. You're scared of him, but I've been watching him. And God's doing something special in him. We're going to get behind him. And I think you should too. That's what happens in Acts chapter 9. And there is no Paul, the great missionary, without this moment where a leader who has influence brings the new guy forward and says, you should get behind him too. If you know much about what happens in the book of Acts, Paul begins to come more and more on the scene. And sooner or later, Barnabas is completely back and you don't see him at all. Maybe that's who God's calling you to be, to leverage your influence to ensure that these church planters have this. Now, church planters are suspicious. They are coming into a community. People are concerned. You leveraging your influence can help. Let me tell you this fun story. So I was speaking at an associational meeting as a new church planter in my association. So I'm playing ball with the association, and the DOM has asked me to speak. But they're doing a little bit of their business before I'm going to speak. So I'm sitting, you know, in the front, and I know he's about to announce me, pastor at Journey Church. And this older gentleman stands up, and he starts railing about these Baptist churches that we're planting that don't have Baptist in their name. They shouldn't be a part of us. I don't know why we're getting behind these guys. And I'm feeling it for the guy who's about to go, and our new speaker. But he had to do that. And I just kind of stopped for a moment. And this guy's name was Jim. And I said, by the way, I just want to say, Pastor Jim, I heard what you had to say about not having Baptists in our names. And I recognize that that's difficult and maybe questions a little bit about what we're doing. But while you may not yet have found much value in what we're doing, can I thank you for the value that you've brought? Because my wife and I stand in line at your food pantry every week, and I would not ever get orange juice if it wasn't for your family or for your church. My kids eat bread because you have a food pantry. And while maybe not yet you figured out that what we're doing matters to the kingdom, I want you to know we wouldn't make it without what you are doing. I never had a bigger friend in ministry than Mr. Tim after that. But I needed to lift him up a little bit, and that allowed for him to then get behind me. So if you're a church planter in the room, recognize we have some lifting up that we can do by honoring the men and women who come before us as well. All right, so that was number four. How are we doing on time? 30 minutes in. All right, we got to keep going fast. All right, number five, share your space. Share your space. So the way our church started is we started in a house, we moved to a fellowship hall, and then we launched publicly September 30th of 2007 in a church, and we were doing a 5 o'clock service. So we did 5 o'clock service for 2.5 years. So if anybody's thinking about doing that, you want to know what that's like, I'd love to talk to you about it. It's got some positives, it's got some negatives. But what that did for us is when we got our own first real building, our building, we sort of began to pay it forward. You know, someone had sacrificed for us and let us use the building. How could we then not say you can use it as well? I remember when my missions pastor came up to me and said, we have 6 churches currently using our space. And I was really proud of that. You know, some of them were using it as worship services. Some of them that were portable just needed a place for their band to practice because they didn't have access to, you know, the place that they have their worship. It might be at an elementary school. They just don't have that, so we're letting them use that. But I was really, really proud of that, that what had been given to us, we were returning back in multiple fold. And it's such a beautiful way for the church to work together. It does have challenges. So the only way it worked for us for 2.5 years is every Tuesday morning I met with Pastor LaGrange. That was the pastor of Pleasant Grove Baptist Church that we were using their facility. And we would pray together every Tuesday. And every Tuesday, he would tell me all the things that we didn't put back right. And he's like, you know, these flowers, they need to go here. Not, you know, they need to be turned this way. I was like, yes, sir, we'll do it better next time. But while that sounds like annoying, what it was is we were keeping short account. He had a place that before it became really bad, he could say something to me, and as long as I could receive it with honor, then we could stay. And truthfully, our church grew from 0 to about 125 from that time period, and then we kind of outgrew that sanctuary, and it was time for us to move on. But you can share your space. Now, let me give you one caveat here. Do not do it for free. I know that it sounds like that's the most loving thing that you can do. But I want to encourage you not to do it for free. And here's why. It's harder to find a better deal than free. It's kind of like letting your college student come back home and tell them they can always stay here. It's just hard for them to ever move on. Mostly because they're going to make financial decisions because it's free, right? What we almost want to do is build their muscles of finances to make sure that what's in their budget, that one day they will be able to be who they really want to be themselves. Now listen, if you feel bad about it, take their money and then give it right back to them. Find ways to bless them throughout the year. If you feel like, no, we're supposed to do this for free and not gain anything, I'm saying you will help them be stronger in the long run if you make sure that they're building in their budget a way that they could survive on their own themselves. Make sense? All right. But sharing your space is a ton of fun. All right, number six, release your people. Release your people. So we have in the New Testament, in the book of Acts, we get this list of leaders that are at the church of Antioch. We get Lucius and Manaen and Simon of Niger and Barnabas and Paul. These are all leaders that are listed. Theologians argue a little bit about who all these people are. We know who Barnabas and Paul are. Some believe that Simon of Niger might be the person who carried Jesus' cross. Manaen is written as a socialite, so this is like some super popular Kim Kardashian leader who becomes a Christian and now is using his influence in the community. Another guy's name is Lucius. Some argue that that might be the physician, the gospel writer Luke. And if that's true, that means we have like the A-team staff. We got Paul, we got Barnabas, we got the guy who carried Jesus' cross, we got Kim Kardashian of their century, and we've got a doctor. Like, this is the A-team, and the best of the best is Paul and Barnabas. What do they do when they have an A-team? Do they go, you know what? We probably could do without Manaen. No, that's not what they do. They go, who's the best of us? And let's send out the best of us. This is probably as scary of a thing that you will deal with in the church planting game as a sending church. Because when I say send people out, it's kind of like faceless and nameless and certainly tithe-less. But when you allow people to leave, one of the things that God's going to do is you're going to watch people walk up on the stage that do leave and going to be like, I don't want them to leave. Like, I need to talk to my executive pastor, and how much are we going to lose with that family? Or it's like, that's actually one of the few people in the church I like to talk to every week. God will test you by sending some of your best people. And I think that's just being the New Testament church. That is getting to be like the church of Antioch and sending out your best. Now, I'm a little cautious about saying it that way because you might get a little bit like, I can't lose some people. God's going to do this at the right time. Like, he's not going to go, all right, you're going to do this for the first time and it's going to be the hardest person for you to lose. He will likely kind of build your faith through that a little bit. So I had heard J.D. Greer, who he said it last night, say this one day. He said, the power of the church is its sending capacity, not its seating capacity. And I remember hearing that for the first time, and I was like, that is right. But I know the things that I actually care about, I measure. Like, I know how many people were here today. I know how many baptisms we have. I know what resources has been entrusted. I know those things because those things matter. And if I'm going to say that that is true, and I'm going to speak that to our church, I've got to figure out a way to measure that. So I started this list. It was called the Journey Church Sending List. And every time that we sent out a church planter, every time we sent out a seminarian, every time we sent out a church staff member, like, not like, you know, we wanted them to leave, but we actually felt the loss of sending out a staff member. They were going to go to another church. Every time we had a seminary and a missionary, I just wrote their names down on this list. And it was kind of a private thing. I just kind of watched that number grow. Now, God ultimately called us to leave that church, which I'm still sad about, to come out here to lead the movement of church planting in Los Angeles, which has been the greatest adventure of our lives. But really, really cool moment. I started celebrating that list every year. Hey, right now there's 63 people who we've sent out. Hey, there's 78 people that we've sent out. And when I announced to our church, you know, I told them, I said, my goal was to just continue to build this list, that there just be people. We would be the church that developed and deployed disciples. I guess I thought that was you guys. But this morning I wrote as the 91st, 92nd, and 93rd person to be sent out of Journey Church will be Will Browning, Tara Browning, and Jed Browning. That was the family that was leaving. But I would say to you, if you really want to take this kind of stuff seriously, you might want to start a list like that, because you're not going to be able to remember it all, but it is really, really important for you to celebrate that with your church. Right, that was number six. All right, number seven. I love this one. Wear their t-shirt. Wear their t-shirt. So we were in about year seven. I had a church planter from Atlanta come in. His name was Todd McGorick. And Todd came in and he said, listen, I want my people to learn to serve the city. Can they come and serve the city with you guys? And I was like, I mean, yeah, what are you thinking? He's like, is there any place that you're serving the city? And we were like, well, we're serving the schools right now. He said, could we do something where we put on your t-shirt, we go, this is a new church planter, planting the River Church. We want to put on Journey Church shirts, go to the people you're serving, use some of our budget. This is a church planter. Our church is probably 300 or 400 people. I want to spend some of our dollars to serve those people. And I'm like, I ain't heard this before. What are you thinking? He goes, I need my people to understand that we exist for something greater than ourselves from day one. And them putting on someone else's shirt before they ever put on my shirt, I think will help them to do that. Oh man, that impacted me. Their first Christmas Eve service, we canceled our Christmas Eve service so that our church could do their childcare, so they could have a full room and, you know, not have all the kids running around. And I was paying back to him what I saw, this new young church planter kind of training up the old church planter. What about this? And I would say that's some of the most fun that you can have, is when you tell your church, hey, we're going to go help our church planter and we're going to do it with their shirts on. Our church is going to get no recognition. Everything we do is for the sake of our daughter church that we're helping out. Wearing their t-shirt, I think, is a really, really great way to not only help them, but to ensure that everybody understands what you're trying to accomplish as well. All right, number eight, and we'll get towards some questions. Love their family. Love their family. So my story is, in 2006, we had our first child, Jed. And 5 months after that, we adopted two kids from Ukraine. So we went from zero kids to three kids in 5 months. And 2 months after that, we planted our church. The assessment was a little bit different back then. We weren't asking all those family questions back then. And basically what that meant was my life was an absolute wreck. I mean, I don't know if anybody here has adopted kids, but if you've got institutionalized kids, they're going through some stuff as you're transitioning. And we're also just now becoming parents ourselves. We got three of them. They don't all speak English. None of them are obedient. It was an absolute mess. And then we start the church, and everybody in this room knows what difficulty that is. And we got to the point where we were just absolutely worn down. You know, where you're like, we need to go. We just need to get away. And you're like, well, we don't have the money to get away. But we need to get away. Well, who's going to watch our kids? Like, we would be embarrassed for someone to watch our kids. And my director of missions, his name was Bobby Bailey, called me up and said, Miss Mary Ellen and I would like to keep your kids for two nights so that you guys can spend a little bit of time together. We know how hard this is. And I said, Mr. Bobby, my kids are not good kids. Yeah, I mean, they may pee in your house, not in the toilet. And he just said, listen, we can handle anything they can throw at us. Not only have we raised our kids, we're raising grandkids. There's nothing they could throw at us. And I remember walking in that house and going, y'all be good. Oh, we're never going to get this ever again. And sent them in and going like, and yet, I'm not sure our marriage could have made it without a few people like that who said, you know what, we can keep them for a night. We could give them 3 hours so they could go on a date. And by the way, here's $200, go on a really, really nice date. You can do that. I had a sending church pastor. Yeah, actually, you guys are going to hear from him. You're going to hear Mark Lee. When he was raising money as a church planter, here's what he did. He would go sit down with a church pastor, and you know, he would give them the pitch about his church plant, ask them if they wanted to support the church plant. And somehow he would get the home address of the pastor and find out what the name of the spouse was. And he would always write a thank you note to the spouse of the pastor he was trying to recruit to be a supporting church. He would write a note, you know, like, I know your husband probably gets a lot of accolades, but I just wanted you to know that your ministry in the church is important. And I hope that my wife can have the same sort of ministry. Thank you, you know, new church planter. He said, you know how many phone calls I got back from pastors? When I did that, I just imagined that they were like, hey, you met with, you know, Billy? Yeah, I did meet with Billy. What'd you think? It wasn't very impressive. Well, he sent me this card. You should talk to him again. I bet he got a phone call back because when we care about the other person's family, it says that we're in this for something else. And again, I told you earlier that on that 10-year anniversary, they're going to thank the person who helped them when they were stuck and cared for them when they were hurting. You want to be that pastor that they say, man, I wouldn't have made it if it wasn't for them. Then care for their family and be there for them when they're hurting. I think I have one last one. I said it was going to be 8. I'll give you the 9th one. It's just simply invite them into your stuff, you know, your staff meetings, your leadership meetings, your sermon prep, your hospital visits, you know, inviting them in to just see how all that's done can be really, really helpful. And then I have number 10 on there because I said we would do 8 without saying anything about money. But you know what? You should give financially. You should do that. But I wanted to make sure that we dealt with things that aren't as obvious of ways that you could become or improve as a sending church. So before we finish and get lunch, I hand this back over to Dino. I want to take a few minutes, see if there's any questions you guys might have. It could be clarity. It can be on this subject matter. It can be a subject other than this. But we got a few minutes to answer any questions. And I always like to say, when you do this and no one asks any questions, you go home a little bit discouraged. You know, it's like, I guess they didn't care. So a question or two will make me feel a little bit better about myself.
I'm in Santa Barbara, California.
Yeah.
A little bit south of here, or north of here.
Not expensive at all.
Yeah, I believe, yeah. I'm just wondering, you know, I'd love to be, we were a church plant 7 years in.
Yeah.
But I, you know, to be honest, I don't know any other church planters. Like, where do church planters come from? Like, we're not really necessarily attracting people. Like, hey, Nate, I want to plant a church. I want to be a part of what you got going on. You know, I just don't really have that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have a network per se.
Yeah.
I don't know. Where do you find those kind of people? How do you get your little flag out? Hey, we want to help people out. You know?
Well, I mean, you're doing it just by being here. You're probably going to shake a few different hands. I mean, we should shake hands and trade numbers. I live in Santa Clarita, and my favorite place to go is Santa Barbara.
Okay,
so you have a friend in me. But usually it's just like that. It's kind of a web of networks. So they, you know, you connect, and I say, hey, do you know this guy who's actually in? And you're like, no, I've never heard of him. Well, because we do kind of gather together a little bit on methodology and a little bit about geography.
Yeah.
So there might be some people that are in your area, but not necessarily, like, you're not doing ministry the same way, so it feels a little clunky. But I think you've done the right thing. Ask the question, start the relationship, and then we can say, here are some more. And I have somebody in mind right now. So it's great.
For a good comparison and contrasting of leaders, context, and how the different models work in different places.
I don't know if I know of a comprehensive book that gives, like, here are the six ways to plant a church and ways to evaluate them. Usually every book is written on their model. So you'll have a purpose-driven model. Here's launch large model. Here it is. But rarely have I seen a book that has all of it. Brad, you got one you can think of?
No, like you said, I think they're strategically focused.
Yeah.
There's lots of great church planning books out there, I think, but yeah, I don't know if one covers all the.
So if there's anybody who's an aspiring writer, there's apparently a need. All right. Yeah, Center Church is good. Yeah.
Planting Missional Church is probably
Malfers.
No, Stetzer.
Planting Missional Churches, yeah.
That's more of a general.
Very good.
Church Planting Thresholds by Clifton.
Yeah. Church Planting Thresholds. All right, I see three hands. Let's do these really fast, and then we're gonna 1, 2, and 3. That is in a similar geography?
Yes.
Is that part of the tension?
Yeah.
I mean, the best thing to do is draw a circle and say, okay, in a 5-mile radius, we have 14,000 people. Is it possible that we are going to reach all 14,000 of those people? Well, probably not. Is it going to take other churches to do that? Absolutely. Should that church be different than us? That'd be great. So what we're going to do, knowing that this church is going to be a new expression, we want to get behind them because their success is good for what we're trying to accomplish. But if all we want is the best church in town, then we don't want them to come in. We're not looking to be the best church in town. We're looking to be a church that's about the kingdom of God. We actually had two churches that were meeting in our building. So we had gone multi-site, had multiple places. And they were serving and targeted in the same exact area, white pastor. And it was just the best thing for me to say to my church. Okay, there's 30,000 people in this town. Hopefully they're going to reach some people that we don't. I lean towards all these things that might feel a little bit kind of crazy because I just saw how generous God was every time we did it. I mean, you do it and it's like, and here's a $100,000 check from somebody because I just wanted to see a church that actually cared about something more than growing themselves. All the crazy stuff happens when we're willing to do that. So I hope that's a little bit helpful. Yes, sir. Okay. So let me say it two different ways. You know that you have the half off scholarship. So everybody who's SBC gets half off per hour at any of the six seminaries. But you're right, at Gateway, they have a special scholarship for church planters that is on top of, in addition to that half. I don't know what that number is. And something that I've been doing lately is I've been trying to find partnering churches in the East, mostly in the South, if they would give a grant to pay for some more. I don't know if we can get it for free. So let me say it officially, no, it's not for free. It is better than the half, but my hope is in a couple of years, I've got it figured out where our church planters that want to go to, you know, our Sin California planters. Sorry, that's my responsibility. Akeem? Okay, I'm sorry. Let me do this when I come back. Yes, Joseph.
Yeah, no, appreciate this. This is great stuff.
Oh, man, thanks.
We just sent out our first church planter who came with a lot of ministry context.
Yeah.
18-month residency with us.
Yeah.
And so I'm kind of, you know, in a spot where I'm thinking about, that's a play, right? Somebody moves from another context.
Yeah.
Embeds themselves in your church and then
Yeah. Specifically about who goes out with them?
No, who goes out next. I'm thinking about like the next planter.
Ah.
So we just have our sending Sunday for that church.
Yeah. And there's a tension between like adopting in and growing from within?
Yeah. I mean, I'm a fan of both of those.
Yes.
But it's like you focus more energy on another in different seasons. Hmm. We're a 3-year-old church.
So. Yeah. I mean, you're in the game pretty early. I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with you taking it a little bit slow now so that you can plant this church well, because the most dangerous church plant for a church is the first one, because if it doesn't go well, then the whole congregation is like, we're going to waste money on this again. But that first one going well kind of gives credibility for everybody else, and you are going to get better at it. Just like you heard my story, we're just continually getting better at it. It probably makes you a... Now, that's hard to say. I mean, if Jesus is going to come back in, you know, 2025, we need to do as much as we possibly can. But barring that is going to happen, I think taking your time on this first one, if we don't get this first granddaughter church or this first, well, it'll be your daughter church off the ground, you might slow the whole movement down from your church. All right, I saw Akeem, and I'll hand it over. Yeah.
They're 3 years in the planting church. But I understand that the dynamics of church planting in Vegas versus the Bay Area is a little bit different.
Yeah.
The churches that can be part of that resourcing that plant church.
Right.
And so he doesn't have to carry the full backing of it.
Yeah.
But what are some benchmarks that I should be looking at to get to the time to begin multiplying?
Well, I do think it's kind of like having kids. You know, you're never ready to have kids. If you waited until you had, you know, you're ready, you probably would never have kids. I do think if you wait until you're ready, you'll probably never be ready to plant a church. I think these conversations are actually kind of good. These are all things you could do as not just the sending church, right? Like, you could be a partnering church coming alongside. Like, this church is a sending church. We are coming along to also support them, and here are two or three things that we can do. I wouldn't want to discourage you to get started, but if you really feel like we're just not ready to multiply, then I think one of the things you can consider is maybe we can come along with someone else who's holding the gavel of sending church, but we can make them a little bit better. And then secondly, I would say, when you find the guy, you find the guy. You know, when you find a guy, I think that's when you go, because now, you got to be careful of that, because you might never find a guy. But one of the things I think will happen is you'll have that guy and you're like, this guy can do it. I need to have the I see in you conversation. I see a church planter in you conversation. But yeah, you could help out with some other ways as you're waiting to get ready, but don't wait too long. And we need you, the church that you planted, we do need it to multiply where you're at. So I'm a little bit selfish in saying, let's get started. But hey, I want to hand this back over to Dina, but can I just say thank you? It's such an encouragement to get to have people care about what you want to say. So thank you guys for honoring me to get to speak about this, and getting to serve in the West has been the honor and privilege of my life. So thank you.
Thank you, Will. I hope you were encouraged as I was, and I've seen a lot of this story in person in South Carolina, so I'm so grateful for Will. I'm grateful for you. I think if one thing I heard is a theme the whole time is that what a planter is really looking for, you already have. And that is a relationship. Somebody who will see them, know them, and hear them. So really, it's not save up all your money or give all your money away, although a day will come to do that. But it's offering a relationship. The average pastor thinks he has nothing to offer to a planter. You do. You do. I want to ask this key question as we pray. What is your next courageous step that you will take as a result of what you just heard? Let me lead us in a prayer time. Father, I'm so grateful that we don't have to figure all this out by ourselves. I'm so grateful that the wind of your Spirit will blow through this room and direct us to act on what we heard. I'm so grateful for the planters who has helped through journey. Lord, I'm so grateful for the planters that will be and have been helped through the pastors and the churches in this room. Please, Lord, blow through this room. Please create a movement. And Lord, help us to be willing to take courageous next steps. In Jesus' name, amen. Say thank you to Will again. And next hour, after lunch, you will hear from Brad Briscoe, and you'll hear another way, another strategy to encourage church planting. So you go to lunch, get your box. You could come back in here, or you could go outside, probably a little bit warmer outside the building. And we look forward to seeing you back at 10 minutes till 1.